Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Here to look back at what happened yesterday, take a peek forward to what's going on right now, and we'll go on for the rest of the day from CBSSports.com. NBA insider James Herbert joins us. How are you, James?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Good. My pleasure. Thank you. Of the three road teams that won yesterday, which one do you think has got the best chance to add to it, to not only make it a series, but actually walk away with a series victory over the course of the opening round?
I'd say Brooklyn. Not that I necessarily pick the Nets to win, but I think they have a good shot, and I think that for two reasons. The first is that throughout the regular season, the Sixers could never really stop Brooklyn in any of those games. The Sixers have had so much trouble all year stopping scoring guards, just stopping like the high pick and roll, the guards with a high dribble that can beat their perimeter defenders off the bounds. And the Nets have three of those guys, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, and D'Angelo Russell, and they put so much pressure on the Sixers' pick-and-roll defense, which all year has been such an issue for that team. And then the second thing, probably the bigger thing, honestly, is Joel Embiid's health. I mean, I don't know if he really should have played in that game yesterday. Of course, in the first quarter, was bullying Jared Allen inside, was getting to the free-throw line. But just over the course of the game, I don't think he was feeling very good out there. He was settling for jumpers on the perimeter. He was not making them. I thought he was sort of a step slow on defense. This is one of the best defensive players in the league. And if he's not on the court for Philadelphia, they're just not the same team. And if he's not himself playing like an all-star, superstar-level player, then they're also not the same team. And Philadelphia doesn't have this super solid foundation that they can kind of fall back on if Embiid isn't himself. This team has changed it up in two major ways with big trades throughout the regular season. After the second one, they had to deal with Embiid being out of the lineup for significant stretches, and they didn't really develop a cohesive identity. And I think you saw that. You saw a Brooklyn team that knew exactly where its bread was buttered, and you saw a Sixers team that was just sort of trying to figure things out on the fly yesterday.
If you are right that the Sixers have been unable to establish an identity here at the start of the playoffs, 82 regular season games, win 50, get third seed, but have questions starting the playoffs, and certainly they blossomed into huge questions yesterday. Who's to blame for that?
I think, honestly, the blame has to be shared. A lot of people, I know Brett Brown has been getting some criticism based on his game planning yesterday. If you want to criticize specific things there, you're welcome to, but I would say if you look at what the front office has done with this team, he does not have an easy job. I mean, he has to balance the fact that they have four guys in that starting lineup that are kind of used to having the ball in their hands, that have been number one options or like pseudo number one options in the past couple of years, not just at various points in their career, but like very recently. And to get those guys to play together, to get guys to accept roles, that is tricky. And it's been even trickier just based on the fact that they don't have great depth, and that the front office sort of sacrificed some of that depth to make those moves happen, and they've just kept changing the pieces throughout the year. I mean, how long ago does it feel like it was when the Sixers had Markel Fultz, Dario Saric, and Robert Covington in the starting lineup? That was a few months ago. That was the beginning of this season. Like, back in December, they were doing that. And Brett Brown, I think, like I said, he's taken some criticism, but he's not at fault for how much this roster has turned over. I think that's just sort of the reality of where they're living right now with this team that has been turned over a couple of times and with guys that aren't necessarily a natural fit. That starting lineup has been really good in the limited amount of time that it had in the regular season, but it was limited because of reasons that were beyond the coach's control, and the bench is limited for also reasons that are kind of beyond the coach's control.
Well, actually, I kind of think it is Brett Brown's fault. Not Brett Brown the coach, but Brett Brown, figurehead in the organization, because he actually started the year as the general manager. He was all offseason, yeah, and started the year as the GM before they brought Elton Brand in. And don't kid yourself, Brett Brown was very influential in the selection of Elton Brand as the new general manager. So it is on Brett overall, maybe not Brett the coach. I'll agree with you there. And doesn't some of the blame have to fall on Embiid himself? Because he has had knee issues since the All-Star game. What the hell was he doing playing 20-some-odd minutes in the All-Star game if he already had tendonitis and knew that he could just make it worse by playing in a meaningless game?
Yeah, I mean, I think two things. I think one, on the Brett question, like, yeah, he had the sort of title of general manager and lead decision maker, but I think that was always sort of a collaborative thing with the guys in that front office that did include Elton Brand even over the summer, that included Alex Rucker, that included Ned Cohen. There was a team of people that were kind of making those decisions. And for everything that Brett was said, like, he didn't want to be the guy that was doing everything himself. He didn't want to even keep that title. He wanted to sort of focus on coaching. But I do think, just from an organizational standpoint, what they did that I think is sort of confusing, that from the summer up until the in-season moves that they've made, is they haven't treated this like, oh, we have a young team that they can grow together and they can wait a few years and we can see how this thing's come together. They really went for it and decided for some reason that this was the year, that everything had to be done and they had to go compete for a championship right away. And that is sort of a top-down thing, whether you want to say that's ownership, whether you want to say the front office, but they've handled that from that perspective from the beginning. And I think that is something that you can certainly question when you look at the age of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And tying into that, the question of Embiid and his minutes, I wouldn't even look at the All-Star game. I'd look at before that. You look at all the back-to-backs he was playing early in the season, all those like high 30s, low 40-minute nights that had like Sixers fans and writers saying, like, what are we doing with this guy? Like, I thought the Sixers were known for this big picture approach, taking it slow, trying to be as cautious as possible. I don't know enough to know whether or not this was just Embiid's choice. I know he doesn't want to be thought of as an injury-prone guy, but it's hard for me to separate the fact that he was getting all those minutes early on in the season and playing in these really meaningless games like they were desperate to win them. That has nothing to do with the fact that he ends up having knee issues late in the year when it really matters. I think if they could do it over again as an organization, I would hope that they would handle that a little differently.
Well, yeah, you and I will disagree on that because, yeah, he was tasked to play a bunch of games. And, oh, by the way, I think they have given him way too much leeway to decide for himself when he's going to play and when he's not going to play. At least they count. The All-Star game doesn't count. So I will always put that at the top of the what the hell was Joel doing list for me. All right, what the heck were the Toronto Raptors doing yesterday coming up short against Orlando? They did finish very strong, did the Magic. Outside of the playoffs, looking in with 2.5 weeks to go, end up not only in but not even in the 8th seed, in the 7th seed, and they go north to the border and beat Toronto. Was this more about Orlando play keeping up the level of play they had, or Toronto once again showing the regular season Raptors aren't always the same as the postseason Raptors?
I was really impressed with Orlando's poise coming into that crazy environment and playing the way they did. I mean, you can kind of tell, like, they've been written off. Nobody expected them to really do anything in this series. I picked a Raptors sweep, and they come in, they're playing free, they're playing confident, they get rolling early, and the Raptors never really shut them off and shut them down. Like, it was interesting to see how much the Magic's length bothered the Raptors throughout the game, but also they just made some really difficult shots, some high pressure shots. And I think, honestly, if the Raptors go back and look and watch the tape, I think they would compare their shot selection favorably to the shots that Orlando got. It was just a matter of, like, the Raptors missed a bunch of open ones, and this is not the first time that we've seen this in the playoffs from them. It's a wildly different team and roster, but the sort of feeling around that city right now, I think, is familiar when you look at all the open opportunities they kind of squandered. And then on the other end, it was just, I mean, wow. Like, that was like the Magic playing basically a perfect game. I would be pretty surprised if we continue to see DJ Augustine like vastly outplaying Kyle Lowry like that throughout this series and looking like an all-star.
I like to think of myself as a middle-of-the-road sports fan in that I'm not a new millennium 2019 analytics can explain everything kind of guy, but I'm not so old school to think those number crunchers, they don't know what they're talking about. Analytics can be great in helping you evaluate things and how guys play and what they can do and what kind of a team you can put together and make work. I'm just not a slave to it. Sure. I want to get your take. What do you think of the plus minus stat?
I mean, on an individual basis, just when you're looking at one game, I don't think it is trustworthy. I don't think it is reliable. If you're talking about one guy's plus minus, like, look at who he's playing with. Look at who the other team has on the floor. I mean, that's why we have stuff like adjusted plus minus, or the sort of ESPN version that they have that a lot of people use, called real plus minus. And that is supposed to adjust for all of those things, like the quality of teammates, the quality of other guys on the floor. Because I think when you just look at it for one game, that can be real noisy. That can be real misleading. I think a lot of people just take the game that we were just talking about, that Toronto game. We're looking and saying, oh, Kyle Lowry was like plus 11.
He's
in
plus
that game.
13.
Like, yeah, plus
he
13
scored no
game.
Points. He played 30 some odd minutes and scored no points, but was plus 13. How does something like that happen?
Well, I think in Lowry's case, like throughout his career, he does help you win without scoring. He has always done that. And that is something that I think honestly, like, people are, because of that, I think people are kind of glowing onto that from yesterday, when honestly he didn't play a very good game. He missed like five wide open three-pointers. He was not very aggressive going to the basket, I think because of the Magic's length, and he didn't play as well on defense as you would expect from a guy like him. So that was a down game from him. I thought he still played pretty hard. He still facilitated okay, and his role has changed from what he used to be. But I don't think we can just look at that plus minus and say, oh yeah, he was great yesterday. Like Fred VanVleet, his backup, had a horrible plus minus in that game, and he happened to be playing with a relatively weak reserve unit. But I thought Fred was fantastic against Orlando yesterday. So that's why I say, like, you can use that sometimes to tell the story. I thought Ed Davis being like plus 28 in that Nets-Sixers game, that did reflect what happened. He was awesome, provided so much energy, did it on both ends. But it's not a reliable thing. It's not the kind of thing where you can just look at somebody's plus minus and say, oh yeah, that means that he played well or played poorly. You got to watch. You got to pay attention to what's actually happening.
Basically, I agree with you, but I just thought that stood out. How do you play 34 minutes, score no points, when you're a scorer, which Kyle Lowry is, but end up a plus 11? It just didn't add up. And, oh, by the way, if you want to look for a reason that Kyle didn't score yesterday, you mentioned he didn't want to go inside against the taller Orlando guards, and there's probably something to that. Did you see the shot that he took to his nether region? He had to be handicapped. He sucked it up and got 34 minutes in. If that were me, they would have had to carry me out on a stretcher.
Yeah, I mean, that hurt just to watch. That was really rough. But on the subject of Lowry, though, like, I think, look, Nick Nurse had a quote coming into the playoffs saying he could score four, he could score 34, he helps us win, he organizes our team, he plays both ends. This is an all-star that routinely takes charges, and I think he got one of those yesterday. He's willing to fight with big guys for rebounds. Like, he doesn't need to score a lot to help you win, but I would say, like, he didn't even get to the four that Nurse said. Like, they expect more from him. Like, I know it's been a little bit of a weird year for him. He's transitioned into more of a facilitator, which has really helped guys like Pascal Siakam take a step. It's helped Marc Gasol be himself when he got to the team. He's a guy that likes to have the ball in his hands and facilitate from the elbows, make plays for others. I think Kyle has been pretty selfless in the way that he's handled it, but I think now that you're in the playoffs, you need an aggressive Kyle Lowry, at least for portions of the game, and you need him to give you some semblance of offense out there. You need to knock down open shots. I mean, a lot of those looks, he would take them 100 times out of 100. You just got to nail him, and he didn't yesterday. And we'd be talking about it way differently if he played the exact same game, but some of those open threes had gone down.
All right, Warriors won the way they were supposed to win, so we got nothing there. How did the Nuggets open at home and Jokic only gets 9 shots over the course of the game? Well, 14 assists, which he's capable of doing. He's as good a passing big man as there is in the league. But is that on him or the team? I'm sorry, Jokic has got to get more than 9 shots up at the basket in a game where you don't break 100 points.
I thought he turned down some looks. There were some threes that he got where the Spurs were just like sitting back in the paint, daring him to take them. And he's a good enough three-point shooter that he should punish them for that. He shouldn't hesitate there. That's letting the Spurs off the hook, and it's making their defensive plan accomplish exactly what they were hoping. I think other than that, like, yeah, you can feed him in the post a little bit more. Everybody knows he's like the best passing center, I don't know, since like Bill Walton, like since Arvydas Sabonis, like whatever you want to say, maybe he's the best passing center ever. Like, you're going to give him the ball at the elbows. You're going to give him the ball on the perimeter, but you didn't see him running any pick and rolls. He used to, like, during the regular season, ran a lot of pick and rolls with Jamal Murray as the screener, inverting what you'd normally see from a center and a point guard. And the season, they also posted him up a lot. They did that a little bit, but I think you have to post him up more. You got to force the Spurs to double, and then he can do his thing and find teammates. I thought he did have a great passing, and he always has great passing games. It wasn't like a disappointing performance from Jokic to me. I would just like to see him be a little bit more aggressive and the team kind of be a little more aggressive in terms of establishing him, because he's a guy that, like, when he has the ball in his hands, good things happen, regardless of if he's shooting or not. If he has the mindset that he's going to look to his shot, that makes the defense adjust to that, and then you get wide open three after wide open three after wide open three, which, by the way, if you look at that game, like, Denver's offense was functioning smoothly. They just missed so many shots. It was kind of driving me crazy while I was watching it.
Fair enough. All right, last thing. Celtics up 20, under 4 minutes to play now. They're going to take out game one against the Pacers. Final three games today: Oklahoma City, Portland, Detroit, Milwaukee, Utah, Houston. What's the must-watch game for James Herbert?
Utah, Houston. That series is so interesting to me. I mean, these have been two of the best teams in the NBA in the second half of the season, while both teams sort of got their collective acts together. And I think it's just kind of crazy and strange how it worked out in the final week, with these teams like the Nuggets sort of tanking and all this weird sort of battling for positions that went on, that these guys end up meeting in the first round. I think that this is not your typical sort of first round matchup. If we go by last year, the Rockets should have the advantage just kind of based on style. But I mean, Utah has just played, like, such great defense over the course of the season, and I think their offense has a higher upside than it did last year. A lot of that is to do with Donovan Mitchell, who is playing a more mature brand of basketball, who's been shooting the lights out for the past couple of months. And if he can really run that offense and sort of get good shots for himself or for others, if he can get to the basket, then I think we could see a really long, really exciting series there.
James, great stuff. We'll let you get back to watching. Appreciate you hopping out with us today. Thanks, bud.
No problem. Thank you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.